Friends, welcome back to the Ageless Athlete Podcast, where we uncover stories and tease out secrets of outperforming athletes in our quest to stay ageless. This is your host, Kush Khandelwal, from my bunker in the Mission District, San Francisco. Thank you for your fantastic response to the launch. If you enjoyed the show, please do rate us and subscribe to us online as it helps others find the show. A different kind of guest today, we have Ari Tulla, a Finnish outdoor athlete and a creator and visionary of smart nutrition and quantified health services. Ari is an avid adventurer. He climbs, surfs, and skis, but also innovates at the intersection of medicine, nutrition, health, and sports performance. His company, Elo Health, leverages personal biometric data to give you fine-tuned supplement guidance backed by science. While his company partners with elite athletes such as climber Tommy Caldwell and ultra runner Dean Karnazes, his dream is to bring high-end nutrition accessible to the average person. Tune in to find out why water fasting may be good for you and why even one drink can affect your sleep quality. Hey, Ari, how are you? I think for once we are in the same time zone. I know you do a lot of traveling over different seasons, but I think we are both on West Coast time in California. I see some sunlight perhaps streaming into your room.
Yeah. Hey, great to be here. Thanks, Gus. I'm back in home in San Francisco, and crazy New Year start. Happy to be alive and back in California. I spent the New Year in Finland, in all the way in Lapland, and that was kind of interesting. First time the kids and the whole family, we went to there, had extended family with us as well. So very dark, no sunlight at all for 2 weeks, and very cold at times, you know, something like minus 20 Fahrenheit 2 days.
Well, that is certainly a world away from us here in California, where we sometimes complain when the temperature, dips below 50 degree Fahrenheit. So welcome back. And for those of us who are not watching this on video, what I immediately love about your setup here, one is you have a very professional looking recording room. And number two, you have these montages of outdoor sports behind you. Mind sharing what do we see on the wall behind you?
Yeah, behind there's a couple of my son's drawings. And then there's also Alex Honnold in the first time when he was climbing a half dome. And that was the ledge that, you know, he was feeling kind of shaky. It's an easy ledge, you know, to go. And this photo was done later. You know, Timmy and Alex went there to take the photo. Just that. That wasn't what climbing even, but, you know, and he was laughing at the whole thing. But, you know, it's a great photo. It was the year photo of the year for Nazi, I think, for 1 year. And then let me show one more. This is kind of cool. This is, I got this a few weeks ago. So this is kind of fun. It's we started to work with Tommy Caldwell. So they sent me like a gift photo from the photo shoot. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Your the wall behind you, shares stories for those of us who are clued in. And yeah, the Honnold one, I think it made the Nat Geo cover, and I think it also spawned this whole trend of people taking photos of themselves, you know, standing on ledges. I really hope nobody suffered any critical accidents trying to imitate and create like Instagram memes. But anyway, moving on, Ari, great to have you on the show again. Mind telling us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what do you do, and then what brings you into the world of the outdoors?
Yeah, perfect. So Ari Tulla is my name. I'm from Finland. Been living in the Bay Area in San Francisco for about 15, 16 years now. So I feel like a very Californian, very San Franciscan, if that's the word. And I have like two things I did in my youth. I I was very deep focused in playing with computers and getting into that world. Got my first PC 086, I think, when I was 6 years old in early 80s. And then, you know, I also started to play sports very young age. So I was doing hockey, ice hockey mainly, and did Nordic skiing, Finnish baseball. Oh, sorry. That's a very unique, maybe it's a Finnish baseball is the word, but, you know, it's like a very different type of baseball. And, but, you know, spend my youth in those two endeavors and always had a hope to be like a pro athlete in my youth. And I think I realized in like high school that maybe I'm a bit too small, not maybe have the ability to read the floor or the ice like you need in a hockey. And that was the time when, you know, hockey players were getting bigger. I'm 6 foot and not the smallest guy. But when you look at the guys who play now in NHL, I mean, they're far bigger. And you know, somehow I then, you know, decided that, you know, the team sports and, you know, kind of the organized sports are there. And then I went to study and got into a startup on the first day in college. That was in 98. So building websites and doing stuff like that in the web 1.0. So that was kind of the beginning for me to becoming an entrepreneur and to build companies. So I got in very, very early. And in college also, I met my best man, you know, who was he's a great athlete still today. He's a triathlete and does swim running, for example, at the top, you know, 20 people in the world. And he talked me into doing some like endurance races and stuff like that in college. And very different than hockey when you run and climb and canoe and bike for days in a row. I wasn't very good at it, but, you know, it gave me this sort of idea that, you know, it might be fun to do something like that later. And then I accidentally, we were moving a place with my girlfriend, now wife, and behind our apartment, there was a few guys, you know, they were carrying stuff. I'm like, what's going on? They were carrying them into a water tower, and that water tower was converted into the first climbing gym in Finland. And that was 99, 98, I think. So I got to very early into the indoor climbing and bouldering and then later, you know, big walls and stuff like that. So climbing kind of became my thing. But yeah, long story short, I was working the tech and got in the Bay Area with Nokia. And I was running a small unit here for them in the gaming side. And then, you know, I started, you know, three healthcare companies after that, first 2000. 10 and now, you know, latest one is in nutrition called L Health.
Amazing. From the backyard climbing gyms in Finland to running tech companies in San Francisco and alongside doing different sports. Sometimes I think of you as a hybrid athlete. You practice your sports with passion and you put equal zeal into your career. A little bit more also into your current lifestyle. As you said so yourself, Ari, you surf, you climb. Anything that particularly stand out? Maybe in the last couple of years, has there been a focus to your outdoor goals?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, you know, I was pretty regimented, you know. Hockey in Finland is a lot like you would play, you know, football in the US or whatever, like very serious stuff in a way. You train, you know, maybe twice a day even. You have a very regimented way to prep for the season, the summer, everything. A lot of quantification. And when I've been now, you know, doing things more as a hobby and for the fun, I haven't been very regimented. And it's funny because I'm a quite regimented in the work. Like I have a, you know, I've been running companies for more than 20 years and you have to be organized, you have to be focused and quantifying everything. And I like to quantify my health in many ways. So I'm a very active in that kind of biohacker, if you like that word, or, you know, quantify self group. Been there for a long time, almost 20 years as well. But for the sports, I don't know. I mean, I just tend to always be a bit slobby. Like, I mean, I don't have a power meter in my bike. I mean, on my pedals. I don't really track. I put down my training quantities roughly, but I don't really like plan them too much ahead. So I have a rough plan maybe, you know, for a week, but, you know, often I do different things. And often I do things alone, like, you know, cycling now quite a bit, maybe most time perspective, climbing. I usually do it alone because, I mean, it's just having another or group setting will be then more difficult to move the times if I need to move the times. And I try to really balance it in a way that you kind of have your life organized. So if you look at my calendar, I have like 5 colors today, my calendar, for example. And it's kind of funny that, you know, you have, you know, there's in a work, you might have like, you know, sales stuff as a CEO, you have, you know, fundraising stuff, you have hiring stuff, and then you have normal work. So I have 4 colors for those, and I try to balance them out in a proper way. Then I have my like a workout, my sport related things in a certain color. Then I have my family stuff often in another color. And then I have my investment stuff we do on another color. So that's kind of the kind of, and then I look at often like a month, and I look at, is my life in balance? Am I living the life in the right way? And if not, then I can rebalance it. But it's funny because, you know, in a way, when I train then, like, you know, climbing, I done times like when I had like a do certain reps and certain things, and I never really stayed with it. And even like cycling, I did a lot of cycling over the COVID, talk about like, I don't know, 15,000, 20,000 miles. And but I didn't have like a plan, like I need to do hill reps. And I've been getting a bit better at cycling, but I could have probably become really pretty good if I would have been regimented in a way to train. So I think your point is like really the outdoor to me is the key piece, almost like being able to be outside, be able to be, you know, doing things you like, maybe listening to a book or at the same time or whatnot. That's, I mean, and it's literally like for me, it's like the vent for the stress and everything that, you know, you kind of work pretty hard. You have, you know, small children, so every time you go, you know, it's like it has to give you something. If the training takes energy away from you, then I think you're gonna burn the candle too far.
Got it. I got a couple of things there. One is, you know, despite your somewhat modesty, I think you are able to manage multiple fronts with aplomb. But then also the outdoors means a lot to you. You know, you put your time into the training part, but like a lot of us outdoor obsessives, I think you get a lot of energy from being outside. Any particular outdoor accomplishments in your sports that you get some pride in?
Well, I think, you know, the climbing for me has always been the, it's been something that I was kind of spending quite a bit of time outside and, you know, not necessarily trying to climb the hardest, you know, crack or the hardest, you know, route, but, you know, to kind of get better and progressively. And then, of course, climbing is a very multifaceted that, you know, you climb a chimney or you climb a crack in Yosemite. It's very different than climbing a sport climb in Siurana or in Calumnas, for example. So other ones are more like climbing inside. And you know, the drat climbing in Yosemite has nothing to do with climbing at the tomb. You know, could like if you go from the tomb into the granite and you're not going to get more than a couple of feet up, then you are done because it's so difficult, the timing technique and so forth. And it's just a tricky one because, you know, you kind of do it for a long time. I done it now for almost 25 years, I think, and a lot of that outside. So you now have this feeling that when you do more bouldering now or maybe do sport climbing, it would be very difficult to go back into the big walls now. And I hope I can, you know, probably go back if my kids want to climb later. They're still too young, but climb with them. But there's this kind of the scare aspect, I think, with climbing that the older you get, I think the more easily you're scared. And we can talk about the surfing, you know, the same aspect there. But with climbing, I think being able to climb, you know, good parts of the, you know, El Cap and, you know, some of those other ones has been really pretty cool. And, you know, most people don't go there because it's a lot of work and very difficult, the whole hauling part. And if you come up, you know, from down up, you can up, down, and then you climb up, that's also pretty brutal because, you know, you need to kind of come down a couple ropes and then climb. And you're literally like, you know, half a mile up on the wall. It's pretty intimidating. And of course, the hiking also, hiking up there is like, I mean, it's literally like 4-hour hike. People don't talk about that when they do like these link ups, but you know, you're going to walk a long way up and down when you go to the top of the El Cap, for example, or Half Dome, even worse. But, you know, I mean, I had a really, you know, lucky thing in a way. That nothing has happened to me except like a couple finger things. But 7-8 years ago, my good friend, you know, he almost died with me on the wall in Yosemite. And that was kind of the moment when, you know, we had our first, you know, baby coming. And it felt like, you know, is this worth it, you know, that, you know, you could die. And it was just a stupid, you know, thing that we were, you know, on an easy route climbing up. And he picked the wrong crack, and then it ended, and then, you know, he just slipped. It was a bit wet, and came down, you know, a couple of beasts came out, and then he came head first into a ledge next to me, and I was able to kind of save his head, but he broke his back and pelvis and was unconscious with me there. And we had to call Yosar, the Yosemite rescue, to climb up there, and they climbed literally up, like, I don't know, almost 1,000 feet. And then we had to helicopter rescue him. So it was like literally like shooting an arrow to a tree and getting the, you know, the thing there and the helicopter out. And it was not fun. And I mean, you had plenty of time, you know, 3 hours time to wait for the people to climb up to you when you have your partner is, you know, unconscious next to you. And you were like, lucky I was roped into the, because you don't always rope yourself on a tree or anything on a big wall. So if not, we might have both go down. And that's just, you know, the moment that you think, like, is this worth it to do the big walls? And, you know, if you do it and you live there, or you can do it so many hours that you know it cold. But when you do it, like, from San Francisco, you drive there and you do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not on your game. You're not 100%. And your rope technique is good, but, you know, you're not, like, native with it because you don't do it every day. So that was the moment when I decided that, like, I might not want to do like a difficult, you know, long big walls, middle of nowhere.
What route were you on? Was it something on El Cap? I think that's what you said.
No, this was like next to it. Like it was like a next to Royal Arches. We were doing like a link up to go all the way up to up there. So there's this big link up when you do Royal Arches, and then you can go to the. The crest,
I think it's a famous slab route.
Yeah, top of that. So we were heading there, and it's a really long day. It's like a 30 plus pitches day. So you had to kind of go pretty quickly.
You know, I will have to agree that on a couple of things that I gleaned from that. Great story, by the way. One is that, yes, core gym skills don't transfer to big wall traditional climbing. You know, one has to put the time into climbing big walls if one has to get good and comfortable at climbing big walls. And being a weekend warrior is maybe not the best diet. I've done that over the last 15 years myself. And one has to be relentless in that training to be able to be comfortable. And then, yeah, secondly, I mean, our goals shift. You know, what might be my goal when I was 25 and I thought life was limitless is different than my goals at 45. And one has to be a bit more strategic about risk taking and goals and other things in life that one wants to accomplish. One thing I have certainly noticed in you, the time that I've known you, is your ability to manage all these different fronts. You know, like we pointed out, you know, you're active career, parents of two young kids, and you do all these you know, time intensive sports. Any secrets? I can see that you're highly calendared. You color code your calendar. I live on my calendar, but I don't color code it maybe to the degree you do. But then I also noticed something interesting, Ari. Last year, we went on a long, long by my standards, long bicycle gravel ride up in Marin. It was fun. I actually have been biking a lot more recently, so maybe I'll do a slightly better.
We need to go up again.
Yes. I'm. Sign me up. One thing I noticed, which was the whole time we were out there, it was a long day, morning to afternoon, and I felt you were quite present in the bike ride. Like, I did not notice you open your phone and check for messages. And as somebody who is, you know, running a growing company and probably has many things that they can attend to, I felt you were very present the whole day. And Yeah, just wondering. Any tips you might want to share on how you are able to be so present and be in the moment of whichever activity? Because I'm sure that when you're actually working, you're also fully present and are putting your time into what you're doing at that time. So, any things that the rest of us can learn from?
That's a good observation. I mean, I think for me, it maybe comes at you know, the fourth time you read Eckhart Tolle's Power of Now, and you maybe you understand finally the point of it. But I try to be, and I think I'm quite good at overall to be focused on things. Like when I work, I don't need like a 2-hour ramp up to be productive. I can be quite quick at it. And then when I do different things, like it's my time, then I don't want to, you know, give that time away, because there's always so many people who try to take your time from you. And that's the only thing you really have. That's the only asset that's yours. Mm. And it's so easy. I think Calendly is a very difficult beast. If people use Calendly in a way that you pick time from my calendar, mm-hmm. because, you know, mm-hmm. then you don't have control. Like, I mean, I think one of the key pieces that, you know, I have done that has been really helpful, that I think I've been telling many people to do and test and try. And it's this concept that, you know, 6-7 years ago, I decided to make Wednesdays my days. And I basically blocked Wednesday off, and there's no meetings ever on Wednesdays. And I haven't had like really any meetings on Wednesdays for 5 years. And before the kids were small, I was taking them on hikes and stuff. It was a morning with, you know, my son first and then with my daughter every Wednesday for like 3-4 hours. And now they are in school, so it became my time. And now in Wednesday mornings, I go surf, I go, you know, a bike ride or both even. And then I work the afternoon, maybe in a coffee shop or my office in downtown or ferry building. Or then I go do something else. So that Wednesday has really, because it breaks the week really nicely. And yes, mm-hmm. it makes, you know, like Tuesday and Monday kind of crap at times. Like, I mean, I literally had like yesterday or Tuesday, I had 13 meetings. And that's like unbelievably rough because you're back to back all the time.
Wow.
and today, I mean, I had a funny day. I mean, I started today at 4 a.m. I had to do a couple of things. I mean, we have a crisis going on in a way. Then I'm doing an interview with TV on 7 a.m. Then I did 8:30 to 11. I was doing interviews with big media like Washington, you know, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and others. So we are launching new products. I mean, that was the morning. So sometimes, you know, you have these crazy days, but, you know that you have something booked in a calendar, like, you know, go for a bike ride in the morning or go for something, you just gonna do it. And I think if you really can, you know, block that time, and then you need to, of course, make your loved ones to understand that you need that time. And, you know, mm-hmm. we've been together with my wife, like, you know, 25 plus years. So, I mean, I think we know each other pretty well, and I need that time. And sometimes it becomes like a selfish thing that, you know, you feel that, can I take that time because, you know, it's my time. But you just need to make, you know, it's not selfishness because it's about your long-term, you know, sustainability. And, but also then I'm focusing on the, on like, because if you are an entrepreneur and, you know, I've now been building companies for a long time, it sucks. I mean, as a life choice, because, you know, you need to give something away. You can't work 8 hours a day if you are building companies. Sometimes you have to work a lot more. So something has to go. And, you know, it's either you give, you know, away your family or your friends or your hobbies or all of them. And the people who give all of them away, 100% of them burn out. And, you know, I've done this now all 20 years and it's been grinding a lot. But, you know, only way to survive the game is to, you know, find a way that is the fit for you. And for me, it is the fit that, you know, I spend, you know, maybe 12 hours a week training and outside mainly. And that keeps me sane. And that value is insane. And I mean, I think my investors are happy campers that, you know, I take one day, half a day off every week because, you know, that keeps me, you know, doing better work.
Protecting one's time, and time is indeed one's biggest asset, as some wise person said one day. And in this day of devices being always on, my time outside, I think just like yours, is ever the more precious. And I think I appreciate being outside also because usually my devices are not on me or they're off me. And maybe that's one reason so far I have, refused to get an Apple Watch. And I feel next time I'm in a surf lineup and somebody's phone goes off, I'm going to blow my lid.
But it's funny because,
last thing I want to hear is...
And you know this.
Is like when I'm out there in the water hearing somebody's phone ring and somebody answering their DoorDash driver.
But I'm very wired, like you know, and it's part of my job at the moment to be, kind of understand what you can do with the tech related to your health. And I do have an Apple Watch when I surf, and it's more like my body will be found at least if I have that with me. But that's a good news, right? The sharks might eat the rest of the body, but maybe they leave the hand, so somebody can find my body. But there's the benefit of I think to have the data collection ambiently, because it can give you kind of this sort of a gamification aspect if you want to be more tracking, or because the fact is, like, if you track things and you train properly, the outcomes are unbelievable. Like, maybe not in like climbing, but if you do endurance and cycling is so easy, you get the Swift, you get the trainer in a garage or your office, and then you do the regimented things, you're gonna get really quickly much faster. Maybe not like really really fast, but It the impact, I did for a moment, and the impact is like, you add like 40 watts of power fairly quickly. And that was surprising to me because it's just so well known how to train somebody to be a better cyclist. And cycling is very simple. It's like one thing, you don't need to learn a huge technique. Like you have to, even running is maybe more complicated. You need to run right and you need to learn to be. But I think the one aspect of this time management and everything is, the balance is really like you need to exercise. I mean, that can be really, and it's a very powerful thing. I mean, muscle is really powerful vehicle to stay healthy. Having muscle at the older age is a really critical thing to be able to be mobile when you go to, 70, 80 years old. But what I think about a lot, and I spend a ton of time, is sleep. And to me, sleep is like a really, like, I mean, is as important, or if not more important, to focus on, having the recovery. Because if you do activities, you need to also recover. And then, of course, food is a key piece of that. But people always ask me, like, what is the most important? How many days can you go without sleep?
Sure. No, I've read some of the stuff on quantified health. I'm not quite a convert yet. I'm almost a Luddite, so to speak, with my reluctance to adopt, but I think I'm slowly coming, slowly getting transformed. I think I might start wearing one of these devices myself. But this is excellent segue, Ari, because I think one thing that I notice about you is I think you dog food, your own products, I think, and also services that you encourage others to develop. I'm curious, just the specific thing around quantified information about performance, about diet, about sleep, and then also about correlating that with your own sports performance. You already hinted at it, but could you maybe elaborate a bit more on what specific improvements have you noticed, and if you have any sort of immediate takeaways that benefit from?
Yeah, I think for me, the sleep is a very key piece of this. So what I was pointing out, you can stay awake for 3 or 4 days and then you die. 3 or 4 days without sleep, you're going to die or go crazy. You can stay without food for 30 days you're not going to feel great. But if you get water and some salt, you're going to be 30 days, you're not going to die. And if you don't get water, of course, you're going to die quickly. I mean, many people live their life to 100 and never exercise. So in a way, like, what is the balance act of, you know, these things? So the sleep is a really key, and sleep has this impact of, you know, helping us to recover. So I really think that, you know, a lot of people should think about this from the perspective of what to do for sleep. You can do a lot. And for me, it's always been like, if you go sleep earlier, you will be better slept. And it's that simple. So Apple, I have a couple of friends in Apple who were working on the sleep side. And they did this big study, like Apple style, big study. And they found out that, you know, only thing that is guaranteed to help people sleep better is to go sleep earlier, between 10 and 11. Nothing else really impacted that much. So that's an interesting point. And then, of course, when you sleep, you know, you should be sleeping in a, you know, in a dark environment that, you know, is rather cool. And, you know, people are buying now like 8 sleep mattresses that are cooling down. That can help. You know, having a good mattress, having a good pillow. I do earplugs. I've been using them for a long time. And it's hard for me to now sleep without earplugs. But I sleep like 5% better with earplugs. It's pretty interesting, but that's a fact. And I can I have quantified my sleep for like, I don't know, 10 years. I was lucky to invest in a company called Oura early on. And, you know, I've been using the Ring for the very beginning. Then some people do like, you know, food, sleep supplementation. But my key always has been that if you eat late before you go sleep, you're not going to sleep so well. So I don't never eat after 7 p.m. Alcohol, of course, is a killer. I stopped drinking completely almost a year ago now. And I hadn't, you know, drunk a lot, but, you know, it just kind of happened. It's easy now, or interesting when you don't drink, that when you go to parties or whatever, you can go with a car if you go. And funny thing is that, you know, I went to some cocktails in an event here a few weeks ago, and then I went to climb after the cocktails. I never done it before because I always had like one beer. I don't want to go train after one beer. It's like a mental thing. So that was interesting. And then I think, you know, these ideas that people talk about a lot, like hot sauna before sleep, that's maybe a bit impractical. I mean, I have a sauna backyard, but, you know, for most people, it's kind of not easy to do. But having a hot shower before you go sleep, that clearly helps. I mean, stretching stuff, all these things, like, you know, massage, the blue light, those are all really good ones. And then I think one thing that, you know, I realized when people are stressed out, and sometimes you have a hard time falling asleep, there's this idea that, you know, I learned, I don't know, many years ago already. It's called deep sigh. So what you do, you basically breathe in all the way. And once you're done, you do like one more deep sigh. And you do that a few times. And it really relaxes your body in a way that you fall asleep. And then I think big one for me has always been that climbing to me is like a problem solving, bouldering especially. And every night I try to solve a boulder problem in my head. And that's how I go to sleep. And then next day, usually I can go to that problem. There's a really interesting like mental, and that's very much like meditation, if you think about what it does to you. But those are kind of some of the things on sleep that I've been doing for a long time. And I have a pretty dialed process. And I do sleep usually really well. And I try to go sleep at like before 11 if I can. If I go at midnight, like yesterday, I went midnight and woke up 4 a.m, like not optimal. I feel pretty slow today. But I think there's so much people could kind of, you know, think about sleep and get immediate performance on the other side. And then the nutrition is, of course, the other piece that, you know, I'm very deep now because, you know, I'm building a company in this space. And I've been talking to a ton of people who, you know, one of our advisors who we have at Elo, Dana Liss is a coach for Warriors and Kings in basketball, also for the Canadian Olympic team and a couple of the pro cycling teams in Tour de France. And she's really good when you talk about nutrition and, you know, what can you do. And I think we are learning a lot about like the super performance. Like we have now the triathletes in Norway. They're trying to break the 7-hour mark in triathlon. And that's unbelievable speed. Think about like 7 hours for like marathon and, you know, 180K bike and then, you know, swim. You have to be super fast.
Not just a triathlon like an Ironman, right? This is the full Monty you're talking about.
This is full Ironman, yeah.
Yeah, and no, that is...
Because it's like the fueling for that is unbelievable. How can you even get enough, you know, fuel in? And but they basically realized that, you know, they are so dialed now that these guys can go like, they go almost full speed, whole 7 hours. Like, it's pretty... And how do we can learn from those things? And for me, I mean, cycling has been really cool because, I mean, I usually did like a, you know, an hour, 2 hour thing. And now you try to do these bigger things. And last year I was trying to do this big bike ride that I failed. My knee buckled, but, you know, I was trying to do 500K bike ride and like 500 kilometers in 36 hours and climb 10 kilometers uphill. So literally like all the hills in the Bay Area around a big loop. And I got to almost 300K, I think, before my knee buckled. And I'd never done that long climbing in a one go. But that was the fueling. Like, you have to think, like, what are you going to eat? How are you going to fuel? Because if you have no fuel, you're going to stop. There's no way. So that was kind of geeky and interesting to me to learn. And I was using our coaches in LO and our advisors mm-hmm. to kind of give me guidance how to do it. And I don't think I could have done half of it without... And I was feeling great when I had to end because my knee was just hurting too badly. I'll go back doing it again and trying it. But, you know, those are kind of fun things. Like, can you do something 30 hours in a row without sleep?
Sure. No, those are some really impressive goals, Ari, slash accomplishments. You know, even doing, what is 60% of... an absolutely massive bike ride is still something to be very proud of, and it sounds like you do on a regular basis or maybe on a continuing basis take advantage of these tools advancements at your disposal, and I think many of those are available to the everyday athlete as well. Can you speak a little bit also to diet? Sleep, huge component. Second component I think you spoke about is being able to measure and track and then calibrate and share. And I think the third perhaps is food. And I've heard you say this somewhere that, food is medicine. Would love for you to unpack that and then also again relate that particularly to us outdoorsy folks who already tend to eat a little bit healthier than the average person.
Yeah, so food is medicine is is a tagline for my company, and it's also a tagline for the old thinker and a doctor, Hippocrates, who lived, you know, maybe 2,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. So he might have said that, you know, food is thy medicine. We didn't have a Twitter at the time, so we can't really go make sure he did it, but, you know, let's give him that. And so I think food is interesting today because we have a massive problem today in our society. So 80% of people today are overweight. And not only that, but we have almost half the people in the US who are obese. Obese means like, you know, BMI is, you know, 29, 30. And that is causing now a lot of, you know, side effects. Like, you know, in COVID, we had more people dying in the US than anywhere else. We have, rampant, you know, rate of chronic conditions like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and others. Cancer, you know, people often now link Alzheimer's and dementia into the same grouping. They call it type 3 diabetes. And all of these things are creeping up. Nothing is like plateauing or going down. There's this crazy graph that, you know, I use when I talk to investors and media. Our life expectancy in the US has dropped 3 years in the last 5 years. So we lost 3 years in the last 5 years. First time ever since the Second and the First World War.
And this is the richest country in the world we are speaking of.
Not only that, but we spend double or more in healthcare per person than any other country. So it's a very interesting graph. And I mean, it always gets people to talk because you can see every other country is going creeping up and we are now dropping down. It's like, what the hell? And then the other graph that I talk a lot about is that you have, think about what makes a healthcare system good? You have life expectancy and cost. right? Mm-hmm. US is like on the other page. They have to add like another page in the graph to get US price because we're so far apart. And we are not mm-hmm. even, we are top 60 today in life expectancy. 60, not like six. And we are now, I think we are 10 years lower for men than Japan, if you take the US men. I mean, we live 10 years less. Think about it, 10 years is a long time.
That's crazy. That's
13% of your life, you know, and they on average live that much longer. And now we have presidents who are kind of should be dead already in the US averages. It's kind of interesting. But the point is that, you know, these are all real problems. And they are the main culprit today is the food we eat. We have food that is basically, you know, this concoction created for us that is highly processed, very, you know, smartly tricking our brain with, you know, fat and salt and acid and, you know, sugar. And we add sugar on everything, but sugar is like, you know, as addictive as heroin almost, for rats at least. So we have this problem that, you know, we eat this food and it's good. I mean, we like it. It tastes good. But mm-hmm. it makes us unhealthy. And we are feeding it to kids already, like from five up in school. So that is the problem that, you know, even if you are eating kind of healthy, there's still stuff creeping in your diet that, you know, is pretty bad. So the idea is like, how do we get out of this mess? How do we get out of this cycle? And I mean, only way really is to eat whole foods, not buy from Whole Foods, but eat this real food. Make your food from the real stuff, not from, you know, the stuff that, you know, is already made by somebody else. And then often when you eat out restaurant food, we often end up eating in the cities, you know, many times a week out, and you kind of never know what you're eating. Yeah? I think we need better work on like identifying the good foods. Like you can go to a salad bar, some, you know, big name salad place, and they have a pretty unhealthy salad that you can do much better at home, for example. And of course the local farms and everything. So for me, it's been really this epiphany, you know, since my wife had a health issue 20 years ago. She had a thyroid tumor that was taken out, and it led into a lot of these autoimmune hormonal imbalances. And we spent about a decade of trying to find a healing factor for her. We used, you know, Western, Eastern medicine, and food in there helped a lot to lower the inflammation in the body and heal the body, let the body heal itself. And at the same time, and we kind of went to this low-carb type of diet with very little wheat or no wheat, no little meat. Now we do eat meat, but you know, we had no meat, and then no extra carbs or sugar at all. And that diet was what we adopted. It's 15 years ago, so a while ago, and it really has helped us to, you know, perform at a better level mentally and physically. And that helps me, I think, to recover. So how I eat normally is my breakfast is basically a protein shake with, you know, like blueberries and avocado and maybe yogurt, and of course I use the Elo protein block there. Or then I can do like a, you know, omelette with spinach and maybe, you know, some stuff like that. And that's a low, no carb, no low glycemic breakfast. My glucose is not spiking at all. And if I don't train, then I might not do it at all and eat a lunch. Lunch is always a salad, always. And then dinner, I don't care. I mean, dinner is whatever the kids want to have or whatever is fun or whatever you go to a new place, eat outside or whatever. But if you eat the breakfast and the lunch right, and then you do the, you know, the dinner as you do, and then you don't eat after 7 p.m. and you don't drink alcohol, I mean, that's a pretty good, you know, way to do it. And you don't need to be like a purist at all. And then, of course, when you train, I try to, you know, I mean, if you do bike rides, you have to kind of have some, you know, liquid energy with you. Like, I don't like a little more tense and stuff like that. Try to be kind of eating real food rather than, you know, these, you know, capsules or tablets or gels. And then, of course, recovery perspective, I always try to get protein after like a harder workout for recovery. And that has worked pretty well. That was something new I started to do when we got the Elo protein out. I've been pretty, you know, fundamental. Every time I take protein to recover, and it feels that I'm recovering well. And I'm gaining more muscle. That's a bit of a problem for climbing because you gain weight. And then, of course, your power weight ratio gets more difficult.
Super interesting about the attention we need to pay to a diet. Some things I want to lean in on. One is you said no booze, right? Now, I also hear many people say, for example, that moderation is key in life, balance, moderation. So for example, somebody like me, you know, I'm not a teetotaler. I drink, I would say an average of 3 beers a week. That's my usual output. And sometimes I drink a beer when I, you know, go salsa dancing and I feel like I burn that out really quickly. So I think what you spoke of is, you know, giving up alcohol completely, even again for athletic types. The second I heard also things like eliminating carbs or going to low carbs. So what I want to ask, and I, you know, this is such a departure from, I think, my youth, you know, spent at the crag eating endless peanut butter jelly sandwiches, which I thought back in the day gave me fuel, which is fine then, but I know that can be improved upon. So I'm just trying to understand, like, what is the right, let's say, practical approach for most of us who maybe are not willing to give up the occasional beer, who do want to have that bagel once in a while for breakfast, and who are not always able to, you know, prepare their meals at home. Again, it's ideal, but sometimes, you know, we are not able to do that and we have to go out and eat, you know, with coworkers or whatnot at lunch. So any middle path also that you can advocate?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, going off the script at times doesn't really matter. I think the alcohol has a little impact if you don't go like a bender or you don't have like a bottle of wine. Because we open a bottle of wine often and, you know, my wife has a one glass, I had two glasses, and that has a big impact in my sleep. And I kind of like wine. I mean, I was drinking a lot of wine for many years, and I mean, it became a bit of a hobby. But when you kind of stop it, to me, it was easier to kind of just say no. Like I said, it's kind of cool to go to an event when you don't need to drink or you don't drink. So it's like easier thing. And I kind of like that. Maybe I reverse myself in a few years, but, you know, now it feels kind of funny to do it that way. And, you know, being from Finland where people expect that, you know, people drink a lot and it's like a thing in a way, which is kind of not, hasn't been my thing, but, you know, people have that association to the country in a way.
Stereotypes.
But I mean, overall, I think, you know, to be kind of smart about it, I think that's key. Because I was a vegetarian for a long time, almost a decade, and then I was a vegan for some time. And it was super easy when I was, you know, I was running a bigger company and you were very busy. Like you literally have like other people owning you. Like you go from like a car to a car to a plane to a car and you don't know where you are. And then you get to a meeting with some people and then you go to another meeting and, you know, somebody tells you what to say and then they do your presentation. So that was my life for a couple of years. And then I was like, well, I need to, it's tough. Like I have no decisions to be made. I don't want to make like silly stuff. So I was eating restaurant like twice a day, traveling a lot. So I went and basically, you know, started to eat vegan food because you only had like two options in the menu. And it gave my life easier. At least, you know, the vegan options are usually pretty okay. They are not bad. So you end up eating like something very simple. And that kept me healthy. And, you know, some of the people in the same team, they gained like, you know, 20 pounds, 30 pounds because we couldn't really move. Like you're literally like just, you know, you've been handled around. And I don't know, that's not the life I wish for myself. But that's kind of like, I think, you know, like a rock star has probably have that life. It kind of sucks. So I think, you know, it's just this sort of being smart about it. And you can eat out in so many different ways. You can have the burrito. You can make the burrito healthy. You can go to Chipotle and have great food. Or you can do Chipotle and have like crap that is really bad for you. But I think, you know, like for the training aspect of this, that, you know, when do you train also is, I think, important here. Because, you know, some people train at night. Of course, then sleeping might be more difficult. They might have time. Some people train very early in the morning. Like, I'm a bit skeptical about the idea that, you know, New Yorkers do, that they wake up 4 a.m. to run. I don't think that's a good idea.
Hey, coming from the man who woke up at 4 a.m., himself.
That was a rare instance. I had to do it. I had this crazy thing going on. I never normally do that. I wake up at 6 a.m.
You know, this is a funny funny segue. I was recently in Delhi in India. I was there for a couple of months, time with family and doing some other things. And if you know anything about India, traffic in India is absolutely nuts. Like, if you think cycling in big cities in the US is dangerous, you know, you have, yeah, it's, you have nothing on cycling in bustling Delhi or Mumbai daytime. So I met up with a couple of friends and they have turned into avid bicyclists, and I can only marvel at their motivation, where they wake up at 3 and they're on the road at 4 a.m., which is before apparently this window before the school buses and the trucks start plying. And they bike in numbers when they can, and their bicycles are often completely lit up. So I'm talking about, like, you know, looking at almost like a Christmas tree, you know, on the road, because it's basically like objective hazards all around you. So that might be one exception to that rule of, like, being a bit extreme with your waking up and exercising, because maybe in some places the only time you can be safe and cycling is maybe before is several hours before the sun comes up. Another thing that you you spoke of, Ari, is really, really great to hear that that your wife Anu was able to combat and get ahead of her autoimmune issues, and knock on wood, now that she's healthy again and looks like you really put the effort and time into diagnosing and treating, and looks like food was a major. I'm wondering if you have any more insights into how, you know, foods can also help us combat, slow down, or even reverse, like, other kinds of chronic things. So, case in point, I was recently diagnosed with bad osteoarthritis in my left shoulder. It really sucks, which means that overhead sports, you know, surfing, climbing, etc., are off limits for me for the time being. And I've also been looking hard at how to cure outside of, you know, surgical options. So any information or advice you might have on people who are struggling with, like, these kind of limiting conditions as athletes, as we get older, do you think the like food and a diet has the power to not just, let's say, slow down aging and improve performance, but also to maybe reverse and cure these debilities?
I think that brings to the take a step back previous. It takes to the point that you have a world where more and more people are now looking at life and things from the perspective of why do I do this? Am I doing this to be faster? Am I doing this to be better? Or am I doing this to live longer, better life? We have a huge trend now at more and more people are looking at this whole idea of exercise and activity and, you know, outdoor, to do it in a way that it will give them more good years in their life. And that's a very new way of thinking about it. And it's a very healthy, because I think we both know that, you know, if you're going to go all in on anything, like, you know, my 500K bike ride will likely lower my life expectancy and not increase it. So if you go too far, like many men who bike, they go and they start doing like way too much and they're just burned out of that. So I think it's a very good idea. Like, think about, like, what are you doing, why you do it, and because you can probably turn out a practice that actually will give you more energy always and give you more years at the back of the envelope. Because I'm afraid of, you know, getting hurt myself. Like, I really like the stuff. I like going surfing every week. I like cycling. I love climbing. I mean, I hate when I'm sick. Like today, I'm a little bit, you know, down. And I was traveling a lot over the New Year, so I got every possible bug you can get, and I getting a fever, but, you know, the whole family was sick, and now I'm a little bit, you know, feeling it as well. But the point about the food, it's really, really interesting. This food as medicine, that, you know, we are in the middle of it, Elo. There's so much stuff happening now that we're learning. Like, for example, the kind of the anti-inflammatory diet. It really works. Like, you know, the type of diet we used at my household is now being used for ALS to reverse it. It's now being used for, you know, mental health, like different diseases, like bipolar disease, to turn it down. You know, fasting is being used for cancer treatment. to make your cells more alert when you get chemotherapy or radiation therapy. Those are all things that are now happening in thousands of people. So it's really interesting. And I think the big thing that I really am excited about is the Virta Health, which is a company using keto diet to reverse type 2 diabetes. I think they have over 50,000 people that they have reversed now with diet. Wow. Type 2 diabetes 5 years
That's
ago
crazy.
Was yeah. irreversible condition. And now they have reversed it with keto diet. I mean, that's unbelievable in numbers of 50 plus thousand. And many doctors are using it now because they don't tend to be the most healthy people often. And that idea that, you know, we can control inflammation in a body. And that inflammation is causing a lot of the issues, like, you know, you know, even has an impact likely in your case, partially. Because if you have inflammation, it will kind of eat to the bones. It will cause, you know, this fragility. And then, of course, you know, the nutrition overall, like at Elo, we done a lot of testing to people, like, you know, blood testing and, you know, other things. We take a lot of the data from the wearable devices. We have done some, you know, sampling and DNA testing and so forth. But, you know, to learn from people, and we have some set of people, we've done like a really thorough, like 200 biomarkers to see what they are, who they are. And we always find something surprising. And I think I would recommend everybody when they turn 40 or something, to go and, you know, do one of these complete tests. I mean, at Elo today, we do 15 biomarkers, nice. But there are, you know, labs you can do way more. One is called Function. They are a new company that have a wait list, but they do like a really good panel for $500. And I did it recently, and I didn't really find anything new, but I had a couple of friends who did it, and they were like, wow, I mean, I learned a lot. I have done, you know, tracking for a decade already. But the point is that you can basically find out things that are impactful. And there are certain things like ApoP, LP small a, those are some of the biomarkers that are really good indicators like heart disease. And if you have a high number, you know you need to do something. And we need those wake-up calls because you might look healthy, you might feel okay, but you might have some underlying issues that you don't know. And some people have often, like, you know, big issues with like the iron, with the vitamin D, vitamin B. Those are simple things, and you fix them, totally. And you get more energy. Yeah. You get better, you know, balance in your body, because our diet is just so hard to do right. Because a lot of the food is so depleted today. You know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, you bought a potato. It was like a small potato. Now it's like a head size. Of course, there's less nutrients. You know, if you make them that big.
Yeah, you know, excellent points about really thinking about what constitutes a diet, and then also really understanding, you know, one's own physiology. And I think getting that full blood panel, I think, is an excellent idea to even understand, you know, what are we dealing with. I want to help us learn a little bit more about this fascinating company that you've built, Ari, at Elo, but just before that, I do want to ask you one other question, which is connected to Elo, which is recently, you know, you unveiled some really interesting collaborations, the ones that I know about. I know you're partnered with Dean Karnazes, who's, you know, a celebrated ultra runner, and Tommy Caldwell, who we spoke about just a few minutes ago. And there could be others as well. And, you know, these are inspiring athletes for all of us. And what I'm wondering is, any information, any insights that you are gleaning from these extraordinary performers that the masses can learn from? Are there like some quick wins, you know, when you work with them and you find that these guys are able to do what they do, that the rest of us can like learn and apply?
Yeah, good question. And I started to record like video podcast with some of these people. So we did like a 2 hour, 2.5 hour thing with Tommy. And exactly the point was to ask about, you know, his life, but, you know, more like what is he doing today? And I mean, many of these people are, I think the Dean is maybe a bit more, he has a nutrition degree, so he's very deep into it. But many of them, I think, are like very natural. In a way that they are just doing stuff and they don't have like a plan, or they don't even have a coach. Like Tommy doesn't have a coach at all. So it's interesting that he's doing his own planning, his own regimenting completely. Mm-hmm. And I think the key learning for me is that, you know, they're pretty sensible. I think they, you know, they eat balanced diet, but I don't think they really have done a lot, like, you know, like, I think Tommy wasn't taking like protein powder as he should, you know, at that age, at his 45 as well. And then I think, you know, he had never done a blood test. So we did a full blood test for him. We'll get the results in a moment to help him. But, you know, they are extraordinary performers, even that they are not really fully optimized. So that's just giving you an idea that, you know, different sports are different. Like we then work with people like, you know, one of our investors and, you know, ambassador team members as well is Joe Thomas. He is one of the great in football. He's a Hall of Famer from NFL. And, you know, he was a big guy. He was like a, you know, 300-pound lineman. And he played, I think he played 16 years without missing a game. Only person, I think, ever to do that. And how do you do that at that size and never miss a game? It's almost unbelievable. I mean, nobody else ever has done that. So he was like very, very focused on food. And he has a great story. It's almost like an unbelievable story that he stopped playing a few years ago. And then he became this fittest guy in the country. He's a lineman. And he lost almost, I think, 70 pounds. And he was in this sort of a, you know, reality TV contest. And he won the whole thing. And he looks unbelievable. He looks like so ripped. And, you know, he's like great athlete. And he never was that big. He had to eat excess amount, 7,000-8,000 calories every day for 16 years to be that big. And he hated it. So that will be interesting discussion with him when we get to do the podcast, because, you know, that is so extreme. I mean, it's way different than, you know, think about eating 8,000 calories every day to stay 300 pounds and you train, I don't know, 3 hours a day. And, you know, you have to do reps, like, you know, I think they squat like 500, they bench 500. Yeah. You have to be a big guy in every way.
It reminds me also what I used to hear about, you know, the Michael Phelps diet, which is after any training session, he would, you know, he would quaff 2 medium-sized pizzas, you know, without even, you know, without even like blinking. Ari, a little bit more about what is Elo and, you know, how can Elo help us?
Yeah, so yeah, what we do, we have this concept that, you know, the underlying kind of idea is like, can we make food into medicine? And that's, of course, the hope. And how can we help that big idea to be real in the tiny steps? The other point we think about every day, and we call our products, they are smart. So we kind of invented this idea called smart nutrition. We have smart protein, we have a smart supplements, we have smart gummies. And we are trying to get this word out there. So back in the days, a long time ago, I was working for Nokia. And we launched the first smartphone before iPhone and Android, the Nokia N95. And we called the device mobile computer, not smartphone. And I think, you know, that was a mistake. We know that now. And now I think what we want to do at Elo is to create these products that are smart, that are basically, you know, they are made for you. They're personalized. They are also precise, based on science and really, you know, built on the latest knowledge we have about human health, and then they are proactive. So the idea is that can we make them also better over time? You know, think about like food could be better tasting the more you have it, or every time you get it, you get the right type of food. Or in a supplement space, you know, as an example, simple example, when you go winter, you are in the northern hemisphere, you get, let's say, more vitamin D automatically if you need that. Or we can, you know, give you like, you know, if you get green tea extract, for example, in supplement pills, we give it for 3 months and then we take it away because you shouldn't have that every day of the year. So those are simple things we do. We also, you know, ask you about medication. If you're taking, you know, A, B, and C medication, we automatically eliminate the nutrients that are interfering with your medication. So today you can buy 3 products. You can buy, you know, supplements in the form of pills and then gummies. And then you can buy a protein powder that is optimized to you based on your workouts. And then after every workout, we notify you how much you need. Like when I go for a, you know, bike ride, I get a notification after my ride that I need to have 1.5 scoops of protein to optimize my recovery and the timing as well. But I think the gummies is really the most kind of exciting thing today, because, you know, we wanted to build, and when you build a product, and I've been doing tech for a long time, and you always need to build a product that's 10 times better, not a little bit better, but 10 times. So we were like, how do you build a supplement experience that, you know, 120 million people take supplement pills like vitamin D and multivitamin every day, and many people take the wrong things at the wrong dose at the wrong time. So we're like, how do we make it better? So we built this sort of this gummy that is 3D printed for you to go. So it's a vegan organic gummy that we 3D print into these molds only for you, and we have 400 million combinations today. So we have sold a lot of gummies already, and we have never sold the same gummy to one person. They're all different so far, which is pretty cool. And you can get that based on a, on an assessment. We wanted to make the process easy. So in the beginning, you had to do a blood test to get our supplements. We did enough blood testing and questionnaires that we learned a pattern with AI. And now we can predict what you need. We could 80% there. So you do an assessment, takes about 4 minutes. Then you get your gummies. And every quarter, you can then change the flavor, optimize them. And if you want, you can also customize the gummies in a way that the gummy has 7 layers. It's 7 pills. So today, if you take, you know, vitamin D and you take, let's say, ashwagandha, or maybe you take multivitamin, you can add those layers into your gummy, and then you don't need to buy them again. So you can save money. Gummies cost about $59 a month. And if you buy a few pill bottles, that's probably going to be more. So it's been really fun to, you know, build these products. And the whole idea in the long term is that, can we then take these ideas that we are now giving for the kind of athletes or the high-performing people like us here, and can we take them to the healthcare? Can we take them to, you know, different places where people can, you know, benefit of the fact that, you know, these are tested in the hardest environment with the people who really care about this stuff? And can we then help even more the people who maybe are overweight or obese and so forth?
Incredible. You know, that's like personalized nutrition, like the next level. I mean, one is you can be prescribed by your medical professional to go and start, you know, taking some kind of supplements. But then the second is one can actually have your supplements tailored to your needs. And where can people, Ari, go to either learn more about the products and also sign up? Which I say, I think that the price point seems quite reasonable given the fact that every single gummy is personalized to the customer.
Yeah, no, it's actually, I mean, we worked hard on getting the price point to be reasonable. Because it's just, it's tough. If, you know, if the price is too high, then people can't buy. You can go to elo.health and you can find the products there. And you can follow Elo at elo.health in Instagram. And you can follow me at Ari Tulla on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn overall.
We will put those links in the show notes. And we're running into the end of our show. Just a few, you know, few fun questions to, talk about before we wrap up. There are many things that you're doing well today. Anything that you want to talk about which you wish you were better at?
Yeah, I think you know, setting I think goals and being maybe more focused would be good, because you know it's you try to be, you know, doing the right things at the right time, but often you still are kind of messy, and that's what life is. But I think it would be really great to maybe have some long term goals, and I think I need that. So I'm looking at now, like I do every year, I do a thing called misogi, and that's kind of the idea in Japan that you can go and do something hard one time a year, so you feel alive. So the monks went under like this gold waterfall, and they stayed there until they almost die. And my misogi this year, last year, was the bike ride 500k. I done multiple different type of things, like I've been doing like wading in a river. I've been, you know, doing things like, you know, going on El Cap, you know, doing like, you know, hikes that are 100 miles and every year different. But that to me is really fun, like have a goal to kind of do and go. And now this year I wanted to do maybe a bit more competitions. So I was thinking like, you know, do some cycling. I just signed up to one in Marin Duro here in the Bay Area in a month and a half, 2 months. Probably going to do like one big gravel ride, like maybe 200 miler. Just to get like a feel that, you know, there's something to weight and a comp. So I think I need like maybe a couple things to get in the calendar. So to give motivation. It's not about not having the motivation, but having like this sort of feel that, you know, you want to do things and maybe extra push and then kind of feel that you show to yourself that, you know, you can still do it. So that's maybe one thing that I need to do better.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's...
And then maybe
it seems like you're already doing those things, but yes, of course, I'm sure there is room for improvement. Everywhere. Ari, in the last few years, has there been a belief, a behavior, or a habit that comes to mind that has most improved your life?
That's a good question. I think, you know, I think one thing that has really impacted me has been the fasting. Mm. And I started maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And my idea is to, you know, do a 4 or 5 day fast once a quarter. And I haven't done it every quarter, but I've been trying to be pretty consistent. And that has been very eye-opening. Because when you do it, it's very hard to do first time and the second, maybe third. But once you have done it 10 times, you know what it is and you are fine without food. And then you can do intermittent fasting, no problem. You can do a day fast, no problem. Because the thing is that when you be fasted for 3 days, mm-hmm. You don't need to eat anymore. So the third time I did it, I went 7 days because I felt so good. And of course, it's not very healthy. You're going to start to, you know, burn muscle and stuff like that. But the fasting is a very interesting thing. And there's a fundamental health benefit, I think, for longevity, like helping you to rejuvenate your stem cells, helping you clean the senescent cells, the dead cells in your body. And I think everything that we read today and learn means that fasting might be one of the best things you can do. I don't mean 12-hour fasting or 16-hour fasting. But I mean, like really fasting multiple days, and the benefits really kick in after this second or third day.
Yeah, yeah. I have attempted to start a couple of fasts myself, and one thing that's always stopped me, and I think this might be just my lazy self, is hey, I would like to fast this week, but then I need to put in this time towards my climbing training, and then I have the surf session schedule. So are you able to continue doing your sports, Ari, while you're on a fast?
You can probably go surf, I think, but I don't think you can do, you know, on the second day you can, but third, fourth day, I don't think you can go climb. You can't definitely go bike ride. You're just too weak. And that's a real problem. So I try to put them in a calendar long in advance and clean up, you know, some stuff. It's almost like if you work really hard, that's a great time to fast.
Yeah, and maybe the fasting can be also like that time could be like a muscle recovery time. You know, rest is good if one does it in an intelligent way. Ari, just one last question before we wrap up here. If there was a giant billboard somewhere where you could print any message you want to say to others, what would you like to say?
I think the just do it. is a very good mantra, because you have so many people who are, you know, still at the older age, they are procrastinating. They are not doing the things they want to do. They talk about it. And I always tend to opt in doing things. And it has paid off dividend greatly. And I've done it for a long time. And now it's the second nature today. I tend to always opt into action. And that's the only way to get things done and build companies and, you know, have a life that is really interesting. And at that point, often also saying yes has been really good, but I think now more and more I say no, because it's just there's too many people asking for the time, so you have to say no. But the point that, you know, if you do things, you just go and do it, don't procrastinate, and focus on, you know, action instead of inaction.
Awesome. I mean, yeah, badass. I will say that we should have ChatGPT rephrase that as something else, or, you know, the Nike lawyers are gonna, you know, come track you down for copyright violation. Ari, it's been a fantastic conversation. Maybe we'll have you again in a year or so and see how things are going. For now, thanks so much. I think there's still some daylight left, so I hope you get some of that before your day's over. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you so much. It's fun.
The future of nutrition and of sports science makes me giddy with excitement. We are just beginning to tap into the possibilities that lie ahead for helping us improve not just lifespan, but our quality of life overall. The challenge, of course, is going to be for adoption and scale, but I'm glad that folks like Ari and others are helping pave the way. Thanks for listening, and please follow and subscribe to the show. Until next time, stay ageless.